Chapter 2, The Big One Hits. Katrina, a name that will forever strike terror into the hearts of those who survived her fury. She started out mild enough, a Category 1 hurricane, when she hit land the first time just north of Miami on Thursday, August 25, 2005, and then weakened as she blew across Florida, becoming a mere tropical storm. But over water once again, Katrina intensified. By August 26, she became a Category 2 hurricane, heading for Louisiana and Mississippi. On August 27, she was upgraded to a Category 3, and on Sunday, August 28, she hit Category 4 status. Then, as if unleashing every last bit of venom, she rapidly intensified to a Category 5 hurricane with winds of 175 miles per hour. Once hitting land near Burris Triumph, Louisiana, she dropped to an intense Category 4 and bore down on New Orleans and the Gulf Coast of Mississippi and Alabama with sustained winds of 145 miles per hour and even higher gusts. A hurricane is like a huge straw sucking up water, which creates a storm surge. When Katrina's surge hit the Gulf Coast, it was 30 feet high in some places, the highest ever recorded. At the height of the storm, she reached a minimum pressure of 26.64 inches, or 902 millibars. The smaller the number, the bigger the storm, making her the fifth most intense Atlantic Basin hurricane on record, and the third worst hurricane to ever hit the United States, surpassed only by Hurricanes Rita and Wilma, which quickly followed Katrina. President Bush called Katrina one of the worst natural disasters in our nation's history. As Katrina pushed north across land, leaving in her wake flooding, tornadoes, and untold damage, federal disaster declarations blanketed 90,000 square miles of the United States, an area almost as large as the United Kingdom of Great Britain, leaving 5 million people without power, which could take months, perhaps years, to restore. With damages estimated to exceed $200 billion, it was the costliest tropical cyclone of all time. But the real cost is not in dollars and cents. It is in lives, probably thousands, and the loss of personal keepsakes, hopes, and dreams, all priceless. Michael and Lori Quatroy are just two of the 500,000 people who in less than 12 hours had their life possessions ripped away from them, along with their hopes and their dreams. Michael says, "The day after the hurricane, we came back to Waveland, Mississippi. It was a mistake. Our home was gone. The whole subdivision was gone. When I asked my father about our trailer home, he pointed to the woods. There was the frame of our trailer, twisted like a pretzel, and there were looters back there stealing our stuff. That really got to me. It's like kicking a dog when it's down." Michael and Lori painfully recall how they survived the storm. When the rain and the wind first began, they knew they had to leave Waveland. But where should they go? Maybe Hattiesburg. But it was too late. They had no place to stay there, and the roads were crowded with others who had waited until the last minute to abandon everything that was dear to them. By this time, the Quatroys' only thought was to get to higher ground. They threw a few things in the back of their truck, put their two dogs in the cab with them, and headed north on Route 603. They crossed I-10. Around Kiln, Mississippi, the storm grew more intense. With blasting rain and gusts of wind buffeting their truck, they drove to the home of their friend, John Gesengles, knowing he would take them in. Too late. As they sat rocking and tossing around in their truck, they were stunned as they watched the roof of their friend's house blow off. They couldn't believe their eyes. Now their only hope was to ride out the storm in their truck. Michael turned off the ignition and gave in to the mercy of the wind. First, the gust lifted the back of the truck and then slammed it down. Then the whole truck would lurch sideways. During the storm, blasts of wind shoved and pushed the truck over 300 yards from where they had originally parked. When we asked Lori if she prayed during this pounding, she said she never quit. She knew their lives were totally in God's hands. As the fierce gusts of wind continued to buffet them, Lori became consumed with worry about all the oak trees falling around them. All she could think was what might happen if one little acorn or one little pebble were picked up and hurled at them with all the force of gusts of over 150 miles per hour. At that speed, a pebble would be like a deadly missile, shattering their windshield and perhaps killing them. Or what if a massive piece of debris slammed into them? That would be the end. When we asked Michael about praying, he admitted, "I have never prayed in my life. I don't even know how to pray. I was too paralyzed with fear. but God must have heard Lori's prayers because somehow we survived. What are you going to do now? We asked. Michael admitted, we're at a loss. We're confused. There is no place for us to turn to. There may be a lot of help, but we don't know where to go. The good thing is I bought 2 tents, but we've got nothing else. Nothing. Lori added, we are still alive, but what is life with nothing? All our lives we've lived to get things, and now it's all gone. We have nothing. We're in shock. We just have to start all over again. I don't even know if our daughter and my mother are still alive. Michael and I went through Hurricane Betsy as children, but now we're both on disability. Michael has epilepsy and high blood pressure. I can't get around. How do you start over? I'm confused. It's too much for us, and now look at the sores on our legs from being in that polluted water. The stories of survivors like Michael and Lori Quatroy are heartbreaking. What do you